And our special guest tonight, Dr. Bruce Goldberg. We're going to take your calls this hour with Bruce as we talk about reincarnation, soul healing, time travel. He's got it all for us. And welcome back, Dr. Bruce Goldberg with us. Bruce, would you once again tell people this offer for Coast listeners?
Sure. This is now you have to mention that you heard me on, you heard the offer on Coast. If you order a copy of my most recent book, Exploring the Fifth Dimension, and you will get not only the book itself autographed, but you'll get a free CD called Fifth Dimensional Travel, which will take you out of the body, allow you to explore past, future lives, parallel, etc., as well as going out of the body. But you must mention the offer from the show. Now, if you just want a written exercise but do not want to buy the book, et cetera, but still want to go out of the body, I will be happy to send you a written exercise. If you call my toll-free number, 1-800-KARMA-4-U, 1-800-527-6248. But please, if you have a computer, everything is on their website. All my exercises are there, including the fifth-dimensional travel. So only call in if you don't have a computer, and I'll send that information out. At the same time, also on my website, you got information about Skype sessions, computer sessions for therapy. All the CDs, all my other things are on there, and articles and videos of actual sessions. So all that is based upon the honor and privilege of being on this show. One thing I did mention quickly, George, the teleportation. I want to give you a quote that one of my patients gave me as a description of his teleportation, and I've also experienced this too. So let me show you what teleportation actually feels like. It's a short quote. It felt almost like I was caught in a giant web. Suddenly, the world exploded into countless billions of glowing threads. They stretched away in all directions, and they intersected everything, including me. The overall effect was very similar to looking at a hologram, except it was visceral as well as visual. You could see/feel the image. That's what teleportation feels like. Perfectly safe, and it is a trip.
It is a trip indeed. It's an amazing ability if you can do it. Are some people better than others?
Yeah, some people are always better than others when it comes to hypnosis or any techniques. By the way, teleportation has been reported all the way through history. A lot of the cases are religious figures, but there are average people doing it. England and Argentina are the two most common locations of the majority of teleportation reported cases, interestingly enough. Yes, anyone could do it. But more importantly, that even teleportation is difficult. It's the hardest thing in the world to do, I can tell you right now. But anyone can do hypnosis. Anyone can use healing. Anyone can improve their life by using these techniques. So that's what I want to mention to your listeners. Remember, the rule of thumb, I say it again because people forget, 99% of the therapy that I do with my patients is done by the patient and their higher self. I'm only doing 1%. That's one-tenth of an LA agent, okay?
Is this something like Tony Robbins would practice at an event?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a public speaker, and he would be using, I'm sure he uses hypnosis techniques and the voice monitoring, you know, the voice, the way you pace your voice. Religious do it, priests and rabbis, everybody uses it. Television commercials, public speakers, actors, politicians, everybody they know the techniques. This has been around forever. They just don't like to call it hypnosis. Your average religious leader or politician is going to say, by the way, I'm doing a hypnotic presentation right now. You know, that's not going to be their top 10. But they use the techniques. It's been around forever. Why do you think you go to a church? Why do you think you have those stained glass windows and the organ music? It's very hypnotic.
Actually, it is.
Anytime you pay someone, salespeople use it. That's how they get people to. You can't convince somebody to do something against their normal will, but if somebody's, let's say, in the mood, a market for a car or a shirt or a pair of shoes, whatever the issue is, and you speak with them and get to them in a hypnotic level where you're now going to increase their suggestibility and they're more likely to buy the product.
All right, let's go to some of the phone calls for you. Let's go first-time caller. Acela in Sherman Oaks, California. Hi, Acela.
Hi, George, and hello. I'm your guest tonight. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing. You're very welcome.
Long-time listener. I just happened on the show this evening. I wanted to ask the gentleman, doctor, I had, from one of your past shows, George, Stephen Gibbs, I think was his name, a time travel machine. He talked about time travel. A couple of years ago, I was fascinated, went on his site, bought the machine. My question for your guest is, Have you heard of this? And it didn't work for me. I was very disappointed. I tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, in the end, they said, I think, you know, you got to go to Sedona where there's, you know, more of a
book. Okay,
let
me comment on the machine because I get a lot of requests and phone calls and emails about this. There will be no time machine developed until the year 3050. So all these time machines, they may sound like people get all excited about them, but I'm just telling you right now, they don't exist now. If they did, believe me, we would know about it. So the Tatos and his development of the wormhole linear accelerator is not going to be until about the year 3050. So it's going to be quite a while. So there are no time machines now. I know there's a lot of movies and TV shows about it and X-Files episodes and et cetera, and it's nice entertainment, but it's not the reality.
Will it be a time machine, Bruce? Why not just the mind?
Well, okay, you understand, the governments and the scientists involved, they don't like to deal with the mind. Yes, there's the Stanford Research Institute, the SRI project that the CIA is doing. You know, they did that in the old days, in the 70s, and they're still doing it from what I hear, about trying to get people remote viewing so they could steal the secrets from Moscow or whatever. But machines simply are, people relate to machines. It's simply a more efficient way. It's predictable. You can't use just the mind and expect it to do something. You have to actually, if you want reliability and consistency, a machine will do that for you.
Next up is Keith in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Keith. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, George. And hello, doctor. Yes, I am calling because I am blind and I deal with a long-term ailment, but I do have unbelievable dreams of keeping myself going, doing well, past lives, because I'm very, very healthy, because I deal with this. I've called George before, and George and I have the same birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing very, very well because it's going to be always around my birthday. I deal with my disease. It'll be over 33 years. I'm very open and honest, and I am not embarrassed. I've been dealing with HIV, and I'm very, very healthy. It took my eyesight, but I continue to keep going, doing my best, and I can say sometimes I want more because
let me give you another solution here, and let me show you something. This is called the new you technique that I developed. So you have lost your sight, the HIV, I understand all that, but in a parallel universe, that may not be the fact. In other words, your body, even though you may look like you do right now in a parallel universe, but you may not have the disease or the situation that's compromising you now. So what I do with my patients is I train them to perceive the other parallel universes, and there are like five major groups altogether, and you can switch tracks. So it's another option is that instead of just dealing with, I know you have a great attitude and I appreciate that, but there are times when you can actually literally switch tracks and be and overcome or not have the issue that's compromising you now. Years ago when I was involved with my TV movie project, the frequency I was on, I did the progressions. The movie was never going to air. The writer was all upset and everything was happening. So I did my own parallel universe scan, and I switched tracks into a parallel universe. So I'm speaking to you from a universe that I didn't, that I wasn't living on 24 years ago, okay? So that's another option. It's always another option.
Next up, Keith, thanks, and you keep fighting the good fight. Yes. Another Keith, this one in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Keith, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Big fan of yours on Ancient Aliens.
Thank you.
My question was his thoughts on the Akashic Record.
Tell us more about the Akashic Record.
Okay, the Akashic Record is stored on what we call the causal plane. That's a very small dimension, and think of it as a fifth-dimensional computer chip. And it simply is a record of all your past, present, future, and parallel lifetimes. And every time you do something, it's going to be recorded into the Akashic Record. So you can't cheat the universe. So if you do think something stupid or you're trying to hide something, you may hide it from people around you, maybe, but you're not going to hide it from the Akasha. It's a record of everybody's complete behavior and just facts about everything you do in life. And this determines when you ascend. You can't fool the perfect beings that created this universe, and therefore they have to have some mechanism to see who you are, and that would be the Akashic Record.
So it's never inaccurate, is it?
No, it's perfect. I mean, It's they call the Akashic Records, they call the Akasha, whatever. It's a Sanskrit term from the East Indian literature.
We were younger, Bruce, and they talked about the book of your life, is that the Akashic Records?
That's it. Yeah, that's what it is. Think of it like you go back to the Old Testament, the Tree of Life. You know, the Tree of Knowledge. Mm-hmm. But nobody talks about the Tree of Life. That's a biggie.
That is a biggie.
It's very simple. So anyway, everybody has one. You can't fudge it. All you want to do is you want to access it, because not only does it give you information about past and future lives, but it can also help you grow spiritually and empower yourself, and prevent you from making stupid mistakes too. See what you did in the past and not recreating the same mistakes. Most people make the same mistakes over and over again. You ever notice that?
Over and over again.
Like, for example, in California, largest state in the country, 40 million people, right? 80% of the traffic tickets are gotten by 20% of the drivers.
Yep.
They just keep on speeding and keep on getting busted.
Let's go to Louise in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi there, Louise.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah, good to have you with us.
Dr. Goldberg, I have thanked you before on George's program for helping me to go back into my past life.
This is Cleopatra, like by the
thank
way.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to thank you in person on the radio.
Okay.
Because I have learned so much about myself from that lifetime. It was very difficult. It was also very loving. But I want people to know that you do a great job, and I remember the 3 hours we spent together, and you taught me so much. So I just want to say thank you. Cleopatra was a fascinating person. I go into her life all the time.
Okay, well, remember now, 99% of the benefits you obtained from that was actually done by you. I'm just simply the trainer. You're actually doing the work, and I, God bless you. I appreciate your compliment, and I'm glad that you call in and let listeners know that you can actually benefit greatly by using these very simple techniques.
There you go, Louise. Thanks. She's the reincarnated Cleopatra, she tells us. Frank in Hollywood, Maryland, it's your turn, Frank. Go ahead.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
Hi there.
Time travel is a favorite subject of mine. Back in high school, in science class, Sister Mary Magdalene Montgomery asked us, what would we do if we could travel back in time? And most all of the students said, we would try to save President Kennedy's life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she said, you can't do that, because if you could travel back in time, you would be a phantom observer. You could see them, but they couldn't see you. And then she said, how do you exist in two bodies? Then the third thing reliving another life, I have this thing that I'm always reaching for, like I'm drawing a gun or something with my left hand, whereas I'm right-handed. If I were to wear a gun belt and draw a firearm, and I'm right-handed in baseball and left-handed, left-handed, and I was wondering if this had anything to do with a past life, because I'm always seeing this village in England. It's on the coastline, and it's a little village, and I just keep seeing this all my life, and I was wondering whether
your higher self is trying to tell you something. We'd actually have to do regression to see whether it is a past life. It most probably is, but I can't say that until I actually do it. But let me comment about the time travel, about the nun that was making comments.
Yeah.
She's right on one level, but incorrect on another. If you're just going back as an astral body into the past, yes, you're going to be the proverbial phantom, and you're not going to be able to touch anything or move anything. However, if you teleport back in time, that's a different ball game now. Now your physical body goes back in time, and you could actually meet your previous self in a past life or in this life. And the problem is, you don't want to touch yourself if you did that, because you would have an annihilation reaction and you would both explode. So that's why you don't want to do that. When you go back in time, yes, you're doing it in your mind if you're scanning it, but there are ways, like the time travelers, the chronos from the future, they teleport back in time with their bodies. So you can teleport back in time physically. It's not easy to do, but it can be done. But any of the natural talents you have, or things that you think are maybe odd about you, or things that not everybody else does that are unique to you or very important to you, most likely they're past life carryovers. The only way to determine that, of course, is to actually go through the regressions. And, you know, a lot of your listeners call in about, I have a technique called the hypnotic time travel CD album that can take you into past and future lives and superconscious mind tap. So you can do this yourself and do a quick scan and see what's going on. But I always recommend doing something. Don't go to a psychic and let them read you. Do it yourself. There's no contamination if you do it. There are contamination potentials if somebody else is reading you.
And you can read yourself, can't you?
Right. That's the whole point. You're actually accessing your Akashic records.
Thomas in La Jolla, California. Thomas, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, thanks.
And Bruce, I think you partially answered my question with Keith earlier. And you talked about a hypnotherapy program that you developed. I presume it's on audio CD, called The New You.
No, it's actually called The Custom Design Your Own Destiny. And the technique is called The New You Technique, but the album itself, if you go to my homepage, is called The Custom Design Your Own Destiny.
Custom Design Your Own Destiny.
Right, and there's also a book by that title, too, which also describes cases of parallel universes and switching, and it works well with...
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about. It seems like we could access training from a parallel universe, from our personality in the universe next door. Say if I'm a cab driver in this universe, but I wish to learn healing or painting, can I do that with the custom design?
Sure, you can actually perceive you may have been an artist, let's say, or a writer, rather than a cab driver, for example, in a parallel life, and you can learn from that. But let me give you a piece of advice. If you're a cab driver, please, if you see a guy from 1880...
don't hit him.
Don't hit him, okay? Leave him. Swerve.
What a great story that was.
Well, let me review.
And the guy had no ID on him, did he?
But your listeners may not have remembered it, because, you know... Okay, what happened is a gentleman in 1880 in Kansas... He goes out to a restaurant to have dinner, and after dinner he takes a constitutional. He takes a walk.
1880.
He disappears. He's never heard from again. And he's reported in the paper, missing, so-and-so left the restaurant. We don't know where he is. Now he teleports into 1950 New York City. It's the summertime, and he's standing in the middle of the street. You can imagine cars. He doesn't know what they are. You know, he's going crazy there. And a cab driver hits him smack on and kills him. So now the police go up to the body, right? They want to see IDs. He's dressed in this old outfit. He's got these mutton chop like sideburns, you know. He's got these like pants that are really weird, like 100 years old or 70 years old. And they see a couple of papers in his jacket that say that it was 1880. It's a receipt of his dinner. He also had a livery stable receipt from this horse and buggy, you know, okay?
And that he left there.
And his full name and address and from Kansas, because he had his papers identification. So that's how we know where he was from. And when they did the research in the newspapers, they found out that that's in fact he was reported in the local paper of going to dinner and then disappearing, and no one heard from him again. So,
and how did he teleport, Bruce? He just merely disappeared, right?
He entered. This is called a spontaneous teleportation. He wasn't working with someone like me. He basically, there are many tears in the fabric of space-time, and he actually just walked into one without knowing what it was. And just, you can't see it. They're invisible. It's sort of like when time travels from the future from the 31st to the 34th century, for that 300 years before they developed teleportation, every time they go back in time with the wormhole linear accelerator, they cause a tear in the fabric of space-time. That also explains some of the weather phenomena we have. You know, when you have, like, fish falling from the sky, you know,
yeah,
and no one can explain
frogs and things like
right?
that.
And there's no water around. In other words, it's like in the desert somewhere. And all of a sudden, so you can't say it's some you know, funnel from...
That's a good point. Body. Bruce, we're going to come back and take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment with Dr. Bruce Goldberg as we talk about reincarnation, time travel, soul healing. Let's go to the phones as they line up. Anna's in Michigan, east of the Rockies. Anna, you're on with Dr. Goldberg. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, my father-in-law was at... He was a 4-point, like at Harvard, and then was a doctor at U of M. And when I married his son, it was really hard for me to talk about my father because they looked so much alike. It was uncanny, and there was a lot that when my father died, he died at 49 from cancer.
Oh, geez. Sorry to hear that.
Anyways, it was really hard because my brother was killed when we were young, and my dad didn't deal with it. And anyways, long story short is that my dad didn't deal with it, and we didn't get therapy as a family. My my brother was killed from a gun, which I hate guns. And so my dad died, and then I married Rich, and it, you know, his father looked so much like my dad.
Did you think he was like the reincarnated version of your father?
Well, I don't know, but I had a dream. I had a dream that we were in France, and it was my dad and my brother, my grandfather. And, I mean, this is before I even met Rich, but I had this dream. And then we got together. And anyways, it was really strange. But when my father was on, he was dying, I mean, I'm into natural medicine, and I was trying to say, okay, there was a Dr. Anthony Sotolero that he did Living Well Naturally. He's an anesthesiologist from Philadelphia. Anyways, and my father-in-law, you know, was receptive to looking at this.
Well, there's a good possibility that there were similarities, but I really don't think they were the same people at all. Bruce, I want to thank you for being on the program. Dr. Bruce Goldberg, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Back by popular demand, something a little spooky as we get into Friday the 13th.
The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. True. Nervous. Very, very dreadfully nervous. I had been in M. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none, passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad? Madmen know nothing. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh, so gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern. All closed, closed, that no light shone out. And then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly, very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening, so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ah, would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh, so cautiously, cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight, but I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work. For it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning, when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber, and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone, and inquiring how he has passed the night. So you see, he would have been a very profound old man, indeed, to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the eighth night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moves more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea, and perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close fastened through fear of robbers, and so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on, steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern, when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quite still and said nothing. For a whole hour I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed listening, just as I have done, night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. It was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew this sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it was welled up from my own bosom, deepening, with its dreadful echo, the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt, and pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise, when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor, or it is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with all these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he neither saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, until at length a simple dim ray, like the thread of the spider, shot from out the crevice and fell upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with a perfect distinctness, all a dull blue, with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray, as if by instinct, precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say, there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier into courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could maintain the ray upon the eve. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder. I say louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous. So I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst. And now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. I then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length, it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there for many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His Eve would trouble me no more. If you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the board so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, no stain of any kind, no blood spot, whatever. I had been too wary for that. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart. For what had I now to fear? There entered three men, who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I smiled. For what had I to fear? I bade the gentlemen welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed them his treasures, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice. Yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much such as a sound a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards. But the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God! No, no, they heard, they suspected, they knew, they were making a mockery of my horror. This I thought, and this I think. But anything was better than this agony. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark! Louder! 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 Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here! Here! It is the beating of his hideous heart.
God, I love that story. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.